Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to take a bite out of the competition? Are you looking for ideas to make your business better? Welcome to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.
Sponsored by Apple Capital Group.
At the core of every successful business, you'll find people making a difference. And with each episode of the Core Business Show, we talk with those people, examine those ideas, and explore the strategies that make them special. Now, the host of the Core Business Show, Tim Jacquet.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. I'm your host. Today, I have the pleasure of having Bill McAnera. He's with Agility Ventures out of Prescott, Arizona. If you'd like to speak with him, please give us a call at 347-324-3460, 347-324-3460. Bill, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tim.
Great. I guess to begin with, kind of tell the audience about yourself. How did you get started with your company, and more about your brand, Agility Ventures?
Be happy to, Tim. Thank you. Been kind of a serial entrepreneur most of my life, so I've always been looking at starting businesses. And about 10 years ago, I was working for Quest Communications in Denver, and was introduced to fixed wireless technology. And saw it as a very, very much so a paradigm shift in telecommunications and the way people communicate. So I went up to Butte, Montana, and built a wireless network up there in 2002, not only to prove to myself, but to kind of prove to investors and such that this was a viable industry, that it was a viable business, and so on and so forth. And so we went up to Butte and built a system up there. It worked great. We did the same thing down in Payson, Arizona, about a year later. Again, was successful in deploying and getting people on it, but also ran into a very real situation at the time, and that was this is a very capital-intense business. And as with most capital-intensive businesses, you've got to be able to have funding to grow and sustain the growth of those businesses. And in my experience of going to banks and other leasing companies at the time, they just couldn't get their arms around our industry. The thing that they didn't like was the fact that the equipment wasn't in a single warehouse where they could, if there was a default, go grab the equipment, liquidate it, and try to get as much of their investment back. So that was a real strike against me as an operator because I did not have that access to cash that's needed by so many startups and businesses who are starting in a new industry or expanding in an existing industry. So that's how I got started in this space, and Agility began the following year just really based upon my experience and talking and working with other operators in my field. We all had the same issue. We had a capital-intense business with a huge demand, but we didn't have access to cash in order to meet the demand. And initially, we were charging our customers for that upfront cost for the equipment. So we put together a leasing program under Agility and targeted the fixed wireless business. And happy to report that since 2004, when we began, we have gone through three funds now. We've got over $60 million in place, and very happy with the results and where the industry is going. And I think we've been a very key cog in helping them get to where they are today.
Okay. Talk about the industry. You know, I think since the early 90s that we want this wireless city. Even we were in the infancy during that time period that it was a dream to have a city that's totally wireless. Are you seeing some cities gravitating towards that finally? And like you mentioned earlier, it wasn't really the cost of the providers, because what happened is cities will open the contract with a provider, and the Verizons don't want to spend the upfront cost, and AT&T didn't want to spend up the upfront cost, but also they had to maintain it. Are you seeing towards that we're getting closer to that, or are we still trying to feel our way through it as an industry?
Well, I think obviously we're getting much closer to it when you look at what Verizon, AT&T, companies like Clearwire have done. But you have to remember also that they're doing it in Tier 1, Tier 2 cities. So the population and the density is there to afford the billions of dollars that they're spending to create these wireless cities. Most large cities you go into now, you can pick up some kind of wireless network so you can talk on your PDA or you can get a connection on your laptop. So we're seeing that. Now, in Tier 3 and below cities, that's where we're finding out that the big boys, the AT&Ts, the Clears, and that, even though they have spectrum or license within those markets, it's hard for them to justify the cost. And so what we have seen is a lot of these rural communities have what are called rural WISP operators, and these are wireless internet service provisioning companies that are creating what you just described. There's not full mobility. In some communities there are. It depends on the technology. It depends on the demand. But we are seeing more and more of it. I would equate it very much so, Tim, to the early cable days when in the larger cities you saw the investments going in, but in the rural communities it was more so smaller operators who went into those areas and built a nice little niche business for themselves.
Okay, so kind of tell us, what is a Tier 1 city and a Tier 2 city? Of course, you know, you have New York, but New York is really expensive to do anything, or Los Angeles. Kind of tell us, what is it broken down by markets or population, pretty much?
Well, it's both, and it depends who owns the spectrum within those areas. There's two different types of delivery methods. There's one that is licensed, that somebody owns that license, that is their frequency to deploy their signal within. The other side of the coin is the unlicensed operator, and they are using open licensed spectrum, so 2.4, 5 megahertz, 900, we're seeing 3.65, we're seeing a little 700, they're looking at TV white space, all of these other areas, because one of the things I'm sure a lot of your listeners are seeing out there is the fact that the demand on these devices, or from these devices onto these networks, is just going through the roof. It's more than doubling annually. And so you're reading much more and you're seeing much more about middle mile. So that's the transport part of this. The last mile is what takes it to the customer. So when you look at cities like Phoenix, or if you look at, you know, Billings, Montana, they all have cellular telephony deployments in them. And so in some of those markets, you'll see people who have a card plugged into their laptop. Then they're going over the 3G or 4G network. There are also some licensed and unlicensed fixed wireless operators that are offering data and VoIP. And one of the newer things that you're going to start seeing from these fixed wireless operators will not only be the data, the VoIP, which is voice over internet, but you will also see IPTV, or Internet Protocol Television, which is one of the newer technologies that's starting to come out. So there's a lot of variety out there, and really, depending on where you are, it's like most airports now you can go into and there's a network. Sometimes it's free. Sometimes you've got to subscribe to it by the hour or two. But you're going to see more and more of this, because as the public accepts this technology and more manufacturers get into building it, it reduces the cost, so you can start taking it to lower population areas where you don't have the density that you've got in the Tier 1 and Tier 2 cities.
Would it be cheaper, for example, if you're in a smaller market, to grow that particular market and use it as a city to demo the product to see how well it works, Are those particular cities are in place right now? That yeah, they have their license, they have all these other things, but they can at least experiment within a nice market that's not a tier one or tier two city.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we've seen that in communities in Montana, Idaho, Wyoming, all throughout the West. We're located in the West, but we have customers all over the country. So we're seeing these kind of deployments. Really, there's no predictability of where it's going. It is more so who the operator is in the area, what kind of technology that they're interested in, and then going out and marketing to that the user within that market and really see what the public demands within those markets. If it's mobility, it'll get mobility. If it's just fixed wireless and VoIP in a rural community, it'll get that. And we'll see it grow and expand and mature really more so to what the community is requiring. When I initially started building these systems, one of the things that I focused on within the communities was development, corporate development, creating jobs, bringing this technology to a region so they could have workers working satellite jobs such as call centers or accounting or really anything that you can do over the internet, commerce. That they could bring and create jobs in those areas, because that was one of the reasons that we initially went to Butte, Montana, was we spoke with the folks at the Capitol in Helena and asked them if there was a community that was looking for just that, development, corporate development, the ability to bring technology in that would create jobs and to help modernize the economy more. And Butte was an old mining community, and they very much embraced us, our technology, as we did them. And I think it was a very good fit for both communities. The same goes for the community of Payson, Arizona, where we also deployed. And it was really after those two deployments, Tim, that I saw the need of somebody to go out and create a funding vehicle for the smaller WISP operator in various markets. And so Agility basically is a company that leases the equipment from the base stations, the towers, the infrastructure, to the CPEs that reside at the customer's premise. And so we created a program that allowed the business owner to have access to capital to grow responsibly and affordably their business. So we work very closely with them in putting together a financial pro forma that is conservative yet affordable for them, meaning is there a way for them to utilize our funding and be able to create more market for themselves. And so one of the things that we ran into as operators, Tim, was, as I mentioned earlier, we were charging between $200 and $400 in installation fees just to help subsidize the cost of the equipment. Because at the time that we started, the customer premise equipment was between $400 and $800, depending on the technology. Now they've gotten that cost down to under $100. So has the technology and has the public has embraced this technology and embraced and demanded these services, the cost has obviously come down substantially. So it makes it a little bit easier. But I kind of fell upon the hurdle, I call it, that I was creating for my customers in order to get onto my network. And that hurdle was the upfront cost I was charging. There was a lot of people who could afford $50 or $65 a month. What they couldn't afford was a first month of $265 to $465. And so we were able to go out and put together a program with some high wealth individuals that would lend us the money, we would pay them interest, and we would reduce the huge upfront cost and just increase the monthly cost to really subsidize the cost of the funding. And what that did was, much to our delight, was it allowed many, many more people to get onto our networks. Again, when the feedback we were getting from the community was, hey, we can afford $50, $55, $60 a month. What we can't afford is that first month where you're charging us for the cost of the equipment and the service. So that's just one way in which we work with the customer base that we have, meaning the WISP operators, to help them grow and expand within their communities to make it more affordable.
Okay. If we take a seat back, what is the future of this particular industry? What do you see? Where is it going? Take us a snapshot in 10 years. Where are we going to be as a society when all of this is all deployed and it works perfectly?
Well, I think we're going to be, unfortunately, in some respects. I mean, I think technology is great and it creates a lot of opportunity. The one thing that it does is it creates a lot of people walking around on sidewalks staring down at their PDAs running into other people. So I think we'll see more of that because we're going to be more, you know, in tune to our PDAs and our telephones and iPads than we are to people walking around us. But that's another issue society has to deal with. But really, where I see this industry going is right now it is very similar to the early cable days of the 50s, 60s, when you basically had a cable franchise in every community that was of the size and demand for that franchise. So that's kind of where we are now. There's over 3,000, I would guess, between 2,500 and 3,500 of these small fixed wireless operators all over the country. We are starting to see some larger regional players in different parts of the country. But I think what the landscape is going to look like in 10 years from now is going to be very similar to cable and very similar to the cellular telephony, in that we're going to see consolidations initially in states and then regions, and then 10 or 15 years from now we'll probably be in the same position we are with cable and cellular telephony of 5 to 10 large national operations that will have done what TCI did basically in the cable industry, and that is go up and consolidate all the smaller operations into a more efficient, larger operations.
So who's your ideal client? Is it the small independent cable operator that comes into you, or is it mainly the telecom small communication company that actually your prime client?
Actually, it is really all of the above, especially within the economy that we have been experiencing for the last few years. Finding funding has been very difficult, not only for the small operator in smaller communities, but the same for medium and large market players. The demand for funding to build out and deploy this technology has gone through the roof, and we really don't see any end in sight. So we work with companies of all sizes, from small market operators who have a few hundred clients to large market operators that have tens of thousands of clients. We work with private companies. We work with some public companies. Really, at the end of the day, it comes down to affordability and access to funding. And those are the two components that a business operator has to mend together in order to be successful. and in order to grow and meet the demand of the community that he is providing service within. So our job is to work with these companies and create really positive cash flowing equations for them to make sure that when they do put up an asset that they know what it's going to take for that asset to cash flow. Meaning in our industry, if I put up a tower and put up access points, how many subscribers or customers do I need in order to break even, to cover my investment, and then at what point am I positively cash flowing, and what is the maximum I can add as far as subscriber counts to that site without any additional investment? And then when I hit that point, what additional investment do I need to make in order to retain and increase the service level as well as increase the number of customers I'm supporting off of that? So it's really no different than any business in that you want to make sure that you're putting together smart equations that create success for yourself in the business.
Okay. Any pros or cons to this particular industry itself?
Well, I think it's got a ton of room to grow into. I mean, this is again, we're in a very early stage of a real game-changing technology that we're all experiencing, and that a lot of us, I'm in my mid-50s, have experienced through our lifetime. I mean, when I was in high school, I was punching holes in cards to do Fortran. And you know, now we've got personal computers, and anybody can write their own code and create their own program. So I don't see it backing off at all. I just see it, the demand going further and further when you talk about file sharing, when you look at cloud computing, when you look at software as a service. It creates a lot more affordable solutions for the small business owner because you don't have to go out and make the investment that you used to in order to have some of the whistles and bells that the big boys had as far as providing service to your customer base.
Wow. For your particular portfolio, for your investors, you just mentioned that you're on your third round of funding. How did you go to the point of going out there to investors to say, hey, I have this product that we want to finance and these are the credits we're looking at? How did you actually approach a venture capitalist to say, hey, this is what we can offer you, this is how we're going to get you a return on it? Then after that, probably tell us what's the ideal customer credits you like to see.
Okay. Well, and initially it was friends and families and high wealth individuals that we went to. And basically our story to them was we went out and we built businesses. We actually built the operations within this sector. So we understood the business from the ground up. I mean, we've poured the concrete, we've climbed the towers, we've been on the roof. So we knew what the business was from inside and out. That gave us the credibility to go to these people and say, we understand this business. We see the need for funding, and we see the demand from the customer, and we're trying to make that together. So initially, when we went out and started Agility and started talking to investors, and these weren't VC, these were just individuals, it was them believing that if we lent money or equipment to one of these operators and they failed, we could help keep them in business, meaning there's no liquidation value once a lot of this equipment that we fund is deployed. You can't afford to go get it, put it in a box, put it on eBay and sell it and try to get your initial investment back. The key to this business is staying in operations. And for us to get our investment back, they need to stay in operations for the 36-month term of the lease. So that's what we did. We went out and we said, hey, we're going to look for companies that are like-minded, like what we did, and we're going to work with them in creating their business model and creating their path to success, and we're going to monitor it closely. Now, the other thing we did that was very important, especially for our customer base, was that we created a facility that they could draw off of, and they only paid for the funding that they utilized. So let's say a business comes to us and says, over the next year, we're going to build out wireless within this community, and we're going to need $500,000 for infrastructure and customer premise equipment. But they don't need $500,000 tomorrow, and they can't afford $500,000 worth of debt service tomorrow. So we work with them in providing them basically just-in-time funding so they can grow and meet the demand, but that they're not overburdened by the debt service. And so that was, I think, the key to working and making our solution work for these guys. And so when you talk about finding an ideal customer for the Agility Fund, it is finding a business owner who is like-minded, who sees our vision. We share the same vision. We just took a different turn after we built a couple of them and said, hey, somebody's got to go do this, and we understand it. Why don't we try? And we were blessed to be successful at it. But our ideal customer is somebody who looks at the technology, looks at the cost, looks at the market. We've got a lot of data now from doing this over 8 years of what kind of adoption rates these operators can expect when they go into a new city, and what kind of costs and revenues they can expect, so we can help them put together a business model that makes sense, that creates value for the business owner and for the community.
Okay. So with your experience, when a person comes to you and says, I have this idea that we want to do this expansion, you guys kind of hold their hand and say, hey, we've been through it before, and this is what you really need to do. Not only are you giving looking at their portfolio to land on, but actually you give them practical advice, say, hey, this works and this doesn't work. And,
well,
and
exactly.
You kind of, okay.
You know, as I like to tell people up front, it doesn't do me any good to lend money to somebody who can't pay it back, because then I'm not going to be in business very long, because my investors aren't going to support me if I'm not paying them back with interest and principal, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have to have a shared vision of what that business is going to do. So absolutely, we work very closely with our clients in creating a financial pro forma that says, okay, our experience shows us that X percent in a community are going to initially sign up for your service, and over a 3-year period, your penetration is going to be Y within that market. So we can put together what we feel is a very predictable model for them. And as long as they're meeting that, we'll continue to fund it. And so we monitor on a monthly basis. I usually have a call, and we have what we call a pro forma dashboard that I work with each one of our clients with in creating. And every month we look at it and we say, okay, we thought we were going to grow by X amount of subscribers, which would create an additional amount of revenue. How did we do? How did we do in predicting the business? And if we did great and it was and we met plan, well, then they knew that they had funding to grow and continue to grow under that model. Now, let's say they didn't meet their expectations. Well, then we have to look at it and say, number one, why? And number two, we don't want to keep funding something that's not growing in the manner that it can afford to take on the debt. So what do we need to do? How do we change the model? And we look at different costs, and we look at different marketing and all those things. Because at the end of the day, I'm only as successful as the companies I fund. And so when you're dealing with a client and it's your funds, meaning we went out and raised the money and we also dispersed the money. And so we're not brokers. There's a lot of leasing companies and guys out there that do a great job, and I work with a bunch of them that come to me and say, hey, I've got this opportunity. The guys in your business sector, I can't find everybody in there, so I rely on them to bring a lot of this business to me. But it's been a great partnership for everybody because there's a demand for the product, and we try to make it and grow, help these guys grow in a responsible manner. One of the things that I work very closely with these guys and gals that are building these businesses is who I'm referring to, in what their exit strategy is, because a lot of people will build a business, but they don't know how or why or when they're going to be able to exit it, and if they're creating value for themselves, you know, what is their long-term goal? Do they want to operate this company? Do they want to grow it rapidly so they can get a target on their back so somebody will buy them? You know, that's one of the conversations I'll have initially with them. Now, when we start a relationship, Tim, with a client, I usually send them a mutual NDA, which is a non-disclosure agreement, an application, and a questionnaire. And from that, I garner a lot of information about the individual, about the business, about why he's targeting the market he is. So that helps me to understand the individual and the opportunity. And then we'll get together and we'll work, either if they're a startup, we'll work on the business model and why they want to do it, or if they're an existing business that has been hamstrung because they just don't have it. Access to cash to grow to market demand. We'll help them put together a program that can meet the market demand. There's nothing more frustrating, because I experienced this as an operator myself, than having a backlog of 50 or 100 households that want your service, but you don't have the cash to get the equipment to provide it to them. And so, you know, again, I come back to this and a lot, and it is creating positive equations, positive cash flow equations for the business operator, at the same time understanding the market and making sure they're pricing their product accordingly. So it really is. There's a lot of consulting that goes into this what we're doing as far as on the lending side and helping people see the vision that we see and then trying to understand the vision that they have for their opportunity and bringing everything into an alignment so they have access to the funding to be successful.
Wow. In an exit strategy, for example, a lot of companies would just love to do it. I mean, they're passionate. They have no idea that they will have to exit that business someday, either by somebody wants to buy it or if they want to go public. But since it's a living entity to itself, they can't run it forever. How do you put in the minds of that operator or that business to say, hey, part of your strategy, you're going to have to plan to exit this business, you know, and part of your planning? Most of them haven't even thought about that. Have you run into that?
Well, that's just it. Usually, Tim, we're bringing up that topic for the first time.
Okay.
And again, it's for agility and the industry that we concentrate on, being the fixed wireless and broadband operators. That's a question in our questionnaire. You know, how long do you want to run this business, and what is your strategy for retirement or exiting this business? And most of them, quite frankly, don't have a clue. You know, they have focused so much on building it, creating it, making sure that the front end is working well. But there's, you know, the old saying in business is, don't ever get into anything unless you know how you're going to get out of it. And
wow.
So this is usually something that we broach early on with our prospective clients, and we set a goal. It may be, you know, I've got one client, his goal is to have enough money to buy an airplane, a motorhome, and basically, you know, they all have different names from it, from retirement day to liquor day to freedom day. You know, you just ask them, really, and you ask them to really ask themselves and go back to their spouse and ask their spouse, you know, what is your goal with this business? At what point would you want to sell out, or what is your long-term goal? I've helped several companies attain those goals to get to a certain size that puts a wonderfully nice target on their back, so a consolidator will come along and say, hey, I will give you, you know, this much millions for your business, and these guys are pretty happy at the end of the day.
Have you had many successful stories about that? Some another operator want to assume them?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I had one customer who sold his first network to a consolidator, waited 2 years for his NDA or his non-compete to expire. He even went back to the company that he sold to and said, hey, I'm thinking of going into this area. If I grow and develop that area, would you buy my company? And they said, absolutely. You know, we bought your last one. We liked it. We'll buy your next one. And so I lent him money to go build a new network in another unserved or underserved area. And he got it up to 1,500 subscribers in about 2 years and sold it to the consolidator again.
Wow.
I had another customer down in the Middle South who I had known for a couple of years. And you can imagine that when you go to high-wealth individuals to create a fund in a specialty industry like we have, you've got to make it very attractive for the investor. So our money isn't bank rate money. You know, we're not 2 points over LIBOR or prime or anything like that. It's venture capital leasing is what it is. It's venture leasing. So we have to be very cognizant that we're putting together these positive cash flow equations. You know, that they do understand that this is the cost of the money, and if I, working with them and creating a pro forma, cannot create an affordable equation, well, then neither of us should do it. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't do me any good to put money into a business that's not going to succeed, and it doesn't do the business owner any good to take on debt he can't afford. So it really is working with these guys up front and making sure that we're all in agreement that this is how we feel the business can grow and expand. And if you meet your marks, you will have access to the funding to continue to grow and meet the market demand. And so that's probably the biggest asset that we have in working specifically in this industry, is that we have the experience. Now we've got the database. You know, we've worked with enough companies that we've created a wealth of knowledge to say, okay, well, 90% of the times in a community of this size with a geographical area and a population density, you will have X amount of penetration within at the end of year one, year two, and year three. And it can be very predictable now, whereas when we first started, as it is with any industry, you're just collecting information. You're not sure what the information is going to produce as far as results. And so now we can really help these guys predict their business.
Any advice that you have before we close out for brokers who want to come submit deals to you? And do you accept any other deals besides telecommunications?
That's a great question. Tim. Thank you. You know, it really is just a matter of, we're a small boutique firm, okay? Mm-hmm. So we're not, we've got four people in our office. There's two partners and two employees. So if a broker wants to do a deal with me, they usually will call me up or shoot me an email. Our website is agilityventures.com, and there's an info tab on there if an individual with a company or if a broker wants to call up and start a dialogue and even to get a better understanding of what we're doing. They're more than mm-hmm. welcome to give us a call. So that's usually how we start. What was the second half of your question? I've forgotten.
I'm sorry, Bill. The second half is what type of deals that you want to look at. Do you do any other deals besides telecommunication?
We do. We like businesses that have recurring revenue. That's what we like about this. That's what, you know, we like about the similarity to the cable model, that it is a monthly subscription-based product. We have ventured into some solar systems, some emerging technology there, some medical emerging technology. Again, our premise is we are an asset-based lender, so we need to have some kind of asset that we lend towards. And then I want to see that it's affordable and that the income is there that they can afford to borrow the money and be able to keep the business operational as well as service the debt.
Okay. Great.
So we've gotten into GPS tracking, we've gotten into solar, we've gotten into biomedical. Really, I wouldn't say there's anything that's off the table, but we have really stuck with telecommunications because that's been our core competency, and that was really what we created Agility for, because there was a niche that needed to be met, and we feel we've done a good job in meeting that.
Okay. And lastly, for the leasee, potential leasee who wants to come with you, what do they need to have prepared before they speak out with you? Yes, they all want to be losing a lot of money. They want to be profitable and so forth. Kind of run us through, hey, this is how I need to prepare myself before I give you a call.
Well, most of the companies that call us aren't making money. Their balance sheets aren't real pretty. That's just kind of the nature of the beast when you're building and growing one of these network-type businesses. So really, it's a customer who understands his business, understands what he's trying to do, who he's trying to create the service for, and to come to us, we want to make sure that there's a business model. So an executive summary that talks about the business owners, why they chose this business, the market, the customer, why they feel they can be successful there. So we want to not only understand the technology that they're looking to deploy, but there's always competition because there's a telephony company or a telephone company, usually a cable company. Satellite is another option. So how well do they understand the market that they're looking to deploy in? Meaning, do you know what the boundaries of DSL are? Do you know how far the cable plant expands? So that if somebody calls you, are they calling because they have options, or are they calling because you may be their only option? And so it really is, there's nothing set in stone. Again, if they have a business that they have a passion for and they think there's growth and the ability to create a positive cash flow equation by utilizing lease funding, those are the companies I want to work with, because at the end of the day, it's very plain to see whether it's going to work or not by utilizing Agility funding. And that's why we go through the exercise. So we want to see that they know their business, know their market, know their competition, and And then it's a matter of mating the access to money, the cost of that money, and the market opportunity into a business model that everybody agrees is attainable. You know, that hey, if I had the funding, could I grow by 50 or 100 new customers a month? Or is this market so small that I'm still, no matter if I have access to money or not, I'm only going to grow 5 or 10 subscribers a month? So right. It's like any business, Tim. You really need to know your product, know your market, and then create a model that shows how you're going to build the business and create value for yourself, for the community, and hopefully to have a nice business that you can live off of and at some point sell and be able to create some kind of retirement for yourself. I'm all about creating opportunities for people. Being a serial entrepreneur, one of the most frustrating things when you go out to start a business is, gosh, I think this is a great idea. Who can I bounce it off of without stealing it from me? And number two, this is a great idea. It just needs money. So who can I bounce the idea off of that has access to money that could help me see my vision?
Perfect. Well, how can they contact you again? Your website, your contact
website is www.agilityventures, and that's agilityventures.com. My email is B as in Bill McNamara, and that's MacNamara at agilityventures.com. And our phone number at the office is 928-541-0771.
Perfect. Again, I really appreciate you taking the time to come on to the program and tell us information about your company. And I really appreciate the 45 minutes you came on here to share with us. Thank you so much, Bill.
Well, thank you, Tim, and thanks to all your listeners. And I look forward to having the opportunity to work with folks.
Great. Thank you, and have a great day. I really appreciate it.
You as well. Thank you.
Okay. You can download this episode on iTunes or Blog Talk Radio. If you have any questions, please give Bill a call with his company. Again, thank you for listening to the program. Again, Tim Jacquet with the Core Business Show. Have a great day and take care.
Thank you for listening to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. For a free quote on equipment leasing and financing, visit our website, applecapitalgroup.com. That's applecapitalgroup.com. And fill out the information to receive your free quote. We hope you'll join us for our next episode. And remember, you can always get to the core via iTunes. You'll find all our previous episodes there. Thanks again for listening to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.